When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Good morning, folks. 5 days away from Christmas, and we're on that countdown, right? And Congress is on the countdown, too, about 11 hours away from the possibility of a government shutdown. We'll talk a little bit more about that a little later. We've got a great show lined up for you today, but before we start, I want to remind everyone that Santa will be with me on Tuesday from 10 to 1. So get the grandkids, get the kids to call in. It's a great time. It's my favorite show of the year. Just love the honesty of kids and what they are willing to talk to Santa about that they're not willing to talk to anybody else about. It makes for an interesting show, and we've had a lot of fun, and Santa will be in the house with me in the studio on Tuesday, Tuesday from 10 to 1. So don't forget to grab the grandkids, the kids, and call on in. We are going to visit with Romina Baccia, Director of Budget and Entitlement Policy with the Cato Institute, about what actually is going on right now with the continuing resolution. Two have failed. The Republican House has got just a few hours left to try and get something done before midnight. So a lot of folks wanting to get home for the Christmas holidays, wondering whether or not their stay will be extended until they can get something going or not. But if there is a federal shutdown, we'll talk to Romina about what that will actually look like, right? In many ways, it doesn't appear to be as bad. In fact, there are some reports of federal employees, this is no surprise to me, are hoping that there is a federal shutdown so they get more days off over the holidays. Go figure. We thought everyone needed a job. Neil McMillan, Louisiana Department of Energy and Natural Resources Director of Federal Affairs, will join us at 12 o'clock about some great news in the Thomas R. Carper Water Resources Development Act of 2024. That passed the Congress on the House, that is, on a vote of 399-18 on the 10th. And we'll talk about what that actually means to us here in Louisiana. Andronika Morris joins us, she is going to talk about the Bureau of Governmental Research. It released a set of recommendations regarding implementation of the Housing Trust Fund. Her experience is in housing, Greater New Orleans Housing Association, and I think that's the name, excuse me. And we'll talk with Andronika at 11:30. At 11:10, the CEO of Delta Utilities, that's the company that's going to buy the gas side of Entergy. On a 4-0 vote before the Utilities Committee the other day of the New Orleans City Council, they passed, they approved and are recommending to the full council to move forward with allowing Entergy to sell their gas properties, their gas assets, to Delta Utilities. Tim Poche is his name, and we'll be joined by Michael Heck as well, president and CEO of GNO Inc. A lot going on in the Middle East. We've not talked to Colonel Alex Gann for a while. And we will talk with Colonel Alex Gann. I think there's some hope that as we approach the holiday season, Hanukkah in Israel, that maybe there may be an avenue for an exchange of hostages with prisoners. They continue to move forward on that. The whole Syrian scenario now has added an additional twist to what's going on there. And we'll visit with Colonel Alex Dan to find out more from his perspective as to what he sees going on. He lives in northern Israel, so the Syrian situation very much influences where he is, as well as Hezbollah on the Lebanon side of the border there. So we'll check in with him to see what is actually happening in Israel at the present time. Yesterday, we had an opportunity to talk to Rafael Goinechi about crime stats, and there is a lot of positive things going on there. NOPD is closing a lot of cases, which is really exciting. We talked about some of the problems with the downstream implications of the criminal justice system not being able to keep up with the effectiveness and the efficiency of the NOPD. That is going to be a problem, because once we have to start releasing people from jail and we're not able to selectively incapacitate the impact criminal, they go back out on the street. They only know one thing: how to steal from you, how to rob you, and how and to commit violence on you. And that's what they do. There's no other way to put it, right? But there's also a void in a number of other areas. And you've heard these conversations about chronic property offenders. And what there was a recent report issued by the National Retail Federation called The Impact of Retail Theft and Violence in 2024. And what this report revealed is that shoplifting surged 24% across the U.S. in 2024 thus far. We're not even finished yet. 24% greater than last year. In fact, if you go back to 2023 and look at the year before COVID, a 90% increase. This is an epidemic proportion. This is something that it's going to have to be dealt with, because you have company after company after company that are trying to hold on, trying to make a living, trying to deal with all of the challenges that they have, separate and apart from retail theft and people stealing their property. And they continue to have this challenge. And it's going to be interesting to see how communities across the country actually respond. We've seen the horror stories, right? The videos in California of just a whole gang of people running in to a store and just rushing it and stealing everything they can get their hands on and getting out. And what they're saying is that these people that are shoplifting, they're not doing it for them, for the goods for them to keep. They have an outlet to sell this merchandise, and that's what they're doing. And they're setting up their own retail operations, whether it be on the internet or otherwise, and they're selling all of the goods that they're stealing from these stores. But not everyone is going out there and selling their stolen goods, online or at a flea market. But the vast majority of them are. And they believe that they're organized, that these are not just one-offs, that there's this growing situation in this country where you have these organized groups of individuals that are stealing property. And a lot of these stores now have really become what they call vending machines now. Why? You walk into the store and everything in the store is locked up. You can't gain access to products that are highly sought after by shoplifters. They lock them up behind a cage. They lock them up in a cabinet or whatever. You got to get somebody to come get it for you. Bring it to the counter. They carry it there. They'll check you out, the whole nine yards, in order to try and reduce these losses that they're having. They're hiring additional loss prevention officers, and they're locking everything up. And they said they're really a vending machine now. And they believe it's going to get worse. Last year, there was an average of 177 shoplifting incidents per day. That's what's reported. Remember, the vast majority of shoplifting, nobody ever knows about. They don't even know it happened until later, when they start running their inventories and they figure out that there's inventory loss. Now, a lot of times they can't prove that it was, in fact, as a result of shoplifting, so it doesn't get reported. But in some areas of this country, we're looking at 1,000 reported shopliftings in some cities a day across this country. This has become, and I hate to use the word, an existential threat to retail in this country today. Now you have employees actually wearing body cameras, recording individuals and interactions with individuals when they're challenged about what they're doing, what they may have underneath their shirt or in their pants or in their purse or otherwise, because the liability that's going on here and the lawsuits that are being filed by the intrusive actions that are taken by loss prevention officers costing them even more money. So they've decided that they need better evidence. And now they're wearing body-worn cameras. This is what you would expect to see in a third world country, right? This is like a flea market mentality. And it's running across this country. And everybody, not everybody, a lot of people are making excuses for them. Some people are saying, well, they're just trying to make a living. On the backs of others that are trying to make a living as well and trying to keep people employed and the like. And it doesn't seem to be gaining any traction to push back on this. And then you have other individuals that when they go in to steal goods, that's not enough. They have to destroy the store. So they walk down the aisles and just eliminate all the goods on the shelving and throw it on the ground, breaking glass containers and things of that nature, picking up cans and throwing them through the glass doors of the refrigerated sections and things like that, sending a message to the community that they rule, you don't. You're going to be subjected to their aggressive and damaging behavior to society, and they recognize that there's little or nothing that's going to be done to them. Because in many cases, there's a threshold of $1,000 before you get to a felony. Think about 1,000 incidents in a city times $1,000. It's a lot of money lost every day. And now we understand why more and more companies are closing their stores. Those areas that are at risk, and the true irony here is that those in the lower socioeconomic group have less options about where they're going to shop, because those stores in those areas are the ones that are disproportionately impacted. So they're cutting off their nose to spite their face. And the true irony is that many people in these communities are not stepping up and saying, enough is enough. We need to do something about this. This is crazy. So it's costing them more to get to a store. They're having to travel further distances. There are food deserts, clothing deserts, all kinds of deserts being created across this country. And we ought to be blaming those that are stealing goods each and every day first and working real hard to turn this mindset and this culture around. We see it here. I talk to folks that are, you know, uptown and in other areas of the city, and they're going into some of the stores there, retail outlets, and they're waiting in line. People are running out every day. And, you know, some family members that I have said, don't go there. If you need something or you can't get somewhere else where it's safer, call me. I'll pick it up. I'll bring it to you. It's not worth getting caught in the middle of these smash and grabs and everything else that's gone on across this country. These numbers are troubling, right? And this is connected to a whole lot of things that are wrong about our policies in this country. And we ought to get our hands around it really, really soon. So there's a big game. Indiana's playing Notre Dame, right? And I couldn't help but want to bring this up. And it's absolutely amazing to me what's going on in universities. So Indiana University requires their students to detail how their privilege caused oppression over subordinate groups. This class is required, is one of many that are required that are similar in nature in order to graduate. It addresses this issue of oppression. It determines who's privileged, who's dominant, and who's subordinate. And this allegedly fulfills the school's social and historical studies requirement that's needed to graduate. So students in this class were instructed to write an in-depth reflection of two parts of their identity. One, a subordinate identity and one dominant identity. And the documents that were obtained by the Washington Free Beacon reveal that the final assignment for the 8-week course was worth about 26% of the final grade. And it assumes that each student has at least one identity group that gives them power over their peers and another that leads to their oppression. So students were given a chart showing examples of dominant identities and subordinate identities. So the first example of the manifestation of social oppression is classism. The owning class, the upper middle class, and the middle class. For those of you in those classes, I'm not sure if you recognize that you are a dominant group. Examples of subordinate groups to that group are the working class. It's almost as if the middle class doesn't work, and of course the poor. Then there's heterosexism, where the dominant group is heterosexuals. The subordinate group would be lesbians, bisexuals, gays, and queers. Then there's ableism as a dominant group. Your physical characteristics, developmentally, psychologically. Able-bodied people are identified as a dominant group. The subordinate group is if you have some kind of disability. Then there's racism. And of course, the only race that is the dominant group is if you're white. Those in the subordinate group would be African American, Asian American, Latina, Native Americans, and multiracial people. I'm not sure of the mix in multiracial people if you're predominantly white in the mix, whether or not you move to the other side as a dominant group. We'll try and figure out whether or not that can happen or not. And then there's religion oppression. So if you're a Christian, you're part of the dominant group. If you're a Jew, Hindu, Buddhist, Muslim, or atheist, you are a subordinate group to Christianity. And of course, sexism. Men are the dominant group, and the subordinate group are women and transgender. I don't know about y'all folks, but in my family, I am not the dominant group in my familial unit. That would be my wife. So I don't know who they're talking to, but in my situation, I am not the dominant group. So the way that this works out in the end, if you're straight, you're white, and you're a Christian, you are basically dominant over everybody else. And I think it was important to point this out. You may not realize that you have all this power, that you have all this authority. You have maybe lived your life entirely wrong. Because maybe you haven't exercised the dominance that you truly have. And maybe there's a desire on your part to do so. Of course, the students went, you know, crazy. They were like, "What? Why are we being compelled to do this? Because I'm born white or I'm born as a male, all of a sudden I'm an oppressor and everyone else is the oppressed, and I have to make excuses for being white, Christian, and a male." And this is a requirement to get out of this university. I'm curious whether or not Indiana believes that Notre Dame is dominant and that they would be the subordinate. I certainly hope that Notre Dame is and put some ass whipping on Indiana this evening. So it's still going on, this issue in universities, still compelling individuals to apologize for their race, their gender, that they don't have a disability, that all of this, if the luck of the, it's purely, in many cases, the luck of the draw, right? You're born healthy. I mean, nothing rips my heart more than children who are not. But I don't think that should be identified as being dominant in any way. I know a lot of folks that have or find themselves in a situation that are physically or some other disability that they have that are small, far smarter than me, will accomplish far more than me on any given day. I meet them every day. But this just goes to turning people against one another in America. And why are we obsessed with there having to be a dominant group and a subordinate group? Why can't we just be all well-intentioned Americans? We'll be right back.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. It's better
over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by retired Colonel Alex Gann of the he was a fighter pilot in the Israeli Air Force, now living in a small village in northern Israel. Colonel, welcome to the show.
Hi, good evening.
Colonel, first, let me just say God bless and happy holidays to you guys. I hope things are improving somewhat. I'm not sure. That's why we have you on today to try to find out exactly what's happening there.
Well, the picture, the great picture looks like this. In the north, it's quiet. In the Lebanese front, the ceasefire is holding on, although Hezbollah are trying here and there, you know, to smuggle some weapons or something, but it's being stopped, so it's sticking. And we're starting to build our villages back on our side. We had some villages which suffered a lot. Some villages even had about 75% of the houses destroyed. So we have to do a lot of building and constructing over there. On the Syrian border, what happened in the last week was a huge surprise for everybody. Actually, the regime collapsed. And the army of Syria actually disappeared. And what we did, as you know, we took the advantage and actually we bombed a great deal of the strategic weapons of the Syrian Army and Air Force. Actually, Syria had, I think, the most dense air defense system of missiles in the world. And it's gone now. And so it's kind of quiet over there. Our forces moved a little bit into the, it's called the separation zone between the, our border and the Syrian border, and trying to clear out all the terrorist depots over there, the Syrian army, what they left. But it's on a low fire. We have some missiles coming in still from Yemen. These guys are really unbelievable. And we had one come in, a ballistic missile yesterday, which actually hit a school and destroyed it. We were very lucky because it was at 2 a.m., so no one was there, but the school was really blasted into smithereens. And so we went and attacked Yemen again, but they're kind of very extreme religious, and the people, you know, and they really don't care. The country is so poor anyhow. So if they had electricity, maybe 8 hours a day, so now they have it maybe 1 hour. So I don't think the regime really cares about it. But we'll see what will happen over there. And Gaza is, you know, still smithering until the hostage deal will go through, and really hope it will happen. I think the fact that Trump is going into the White House, and he declared that if the deal will not be done before he goes in, all hell will break out. It had some impact on the side, and it put some fire under the discussions. But we still hope it will happen as soon as possible, because really these people have been suffering over there. I think a great deal of them are not with us anymore. They're dead, but we still do not know. So the country is slowly, the war is calming down. And now we have our internal problems with the government. We have a government which is really performing very poorly, and we'll have to get rid of it, but it takes time. So we have a front in the north, in the east, in the south, in the far south, in the west, and inside. So it's interesting over here.
What's going? How close are you to the Golan Heights, and what's going on there? Obviously, that's always been a friction point with Syria, and you know, funding and bringing in arms into Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. What's actually happening there? And because of the Syrian government, the fall in the short term, has that created more stability for y'all in the north?
It's well. I live about 20 miles. With a bird flying from the Golan Heights, it takes about an hour to get there. What's happening over there is because the Syrian army has literally disappeared, and they left their depots and camps and their equipment. And we don't know what the rebels will do. The rebels, they are not one group. There are dozens of groups. Some are very jihadistic, very religious, Islamic big group. Some of them want to see democracy. Some of them are Druze. Some of them are Kurds. And they have each other by the throat. So it's quiet on our side. And we are waiting to see what will develop over there. We don't trust Erdogan. Erdogan is Turkey's president, who actually he stirred things up, and he supported the rebels. And his goal is to get rid of the Kurds in eastern Turkey, which he sees them as a threat to Turkey. So he's trying to do that through the rebels in Syria. So it's very tense. I know the U.S. has sent troops to northern Kurdistan, in northern part of Syria, I would say to deter or to protect the Kurds over there in the northeastern part of Syria. But it's very unstable, and it can the tipping point it can move us here or there in a blink, in no time. So we're ready.
Is there interest on the part of Israel to take control of the Golan Heights?
Well, first of all, we have control of the Golan Heights.
But I thought it was I thought it was contested for a period of time in certain parts of it.
No.
You would know better.
The Golan Heights. I would say the great deal of them, which were taken by Israel after the 67 war,
right?
The population there was very small. in the Golan Heights. And eventually it was declared as a part of Israel. And Trump and his previous administration, they accepted that. And we feel this will be part of Israel forever. Mm-hmm. The Golan, in the northern Golan, there is a mountain which is called Hermon. And it has two high peaks, which actually are overlooking Israel, Lebanon, and Syria. So on one peak, the Israeli forces are, and now when the Syrians have left, so our troops went into the other peak. It's called the Syrian Hermon part. So we eventually are actually trying to clear the borderline from ammunition, from mines, from the remains of the Syrian army. And we built a defense line over there with a huge fence and the trenches and whatever, because we don't know what will happen with the rebels. The rebels, they speak, and their leader tries to put a moderate face on, but he is wanted by the United States with a $10 million reward. So we don't know what will happen with him. He's not a big, he's not a priest. He's someone which you can expect the surprises. But he says that Syria has enough of wars and they want a peace and quiet. So we will be more than happy to have peace and quiet with them. But we'll see. The Iranians have been moving out their troops from Syria. So it's the tension between Israel and the Iranian forces over there is lower. The flames are lowering and the temperature is going down a little bit on that front.
Well, that would be a positive. That would be a very positive thing, right, if they turn their back on the Iranians. And in northern Syria, I know the Russians, through Aleppo and all that area, provided a lot of stability there with the presence of their military, and they've pulled out as well, right?
The Russians, what interested the Russians was they have a port in the Tartus, which is northern Syria, for their battleships, and they have one airfield, which they have aircrafts over there, which is close by. They actually are concentrated in a very, very small area. They don't care too much about the Syrians. They care about their position over there, that they can hold this position. Because the Russians, they have, and the West, Russia is huge, but on the west side, the water access in the north freezes in the winter, and the other access is on the Black Sea, which is controlled by NATO and Turkey. So the Russians always were looking for a harbor, which will be, they call it a warm water harbor. So they have it in Syria, and now they're talking to the rebels because they want to maintain this asset. But we'll see what will happen with them. The fact that the Iranians are moving out, this is the most important thing. The rebels hate the Iranians and the Hezbollah because they were actually the ones who were oppressing them all the time and murdering, I would say, hundreds of thousands of the people in northern Syria. So Hezbollah is now actually cut off of all its supply lines, and they're still in Lebanon. It is to see what the Lebanese army will do, if they will really fulfill their part in this peace ceasefire agreement or not. But when the Iranians are out, it's good news.
Colonel, would you say that this is an opportunity for Lebanon like no other in modern times to rid themselves of Hezbollah?
It's unbelievable. Yes, it's an unbelievable opportunity to them. We hear it because we see their news and their media, and many people say it, that they thank Israel for taking out most of Hezbollah, because Hezbollah was controlling Lebanon with an iron fist, and actually they were controlling also the government and controlling everything. So the Lebanese are more than happy that we did what we did to Hezbollah. I mean, when you say Lebanon is divided basically into three almost equal parts. It's the Christians are about a third. They are in the north. The Shiites, which are the Hezbollah, which are more in the south. And the Sunnis, which are spread all over, they're also about a third. And what happened was the Shiites in the south, they controlled most of Lebanon by force. So now the others are happy, and we'll see what will happen.
And they were the Shiites, they were the predominant force in the Lebanese government as well, right?
Yes, yes. They were not the majority, but whenever they had a problem, like they murdered with the Syrians the Lebanese president because he wasn't to their likes. And they controlled, you know, they were intimidating everybody who was against them. But now the Lebanese are getting back at them. You know, we see sometimes when the Shiites were fleeing from the south-north, they were not accepted by the local population. They were actually driven away. No one wanted them in their area. So we'll see. But now they want to go back south, the Shiites. Most of the Shiites' villages in the south, which were close to our border, are, I would say, totally wrecked. You cannot live in them. You have to build them from the beginning because under each one of these villages was a fort of Hezbollah with missiles. You know, people had in their basement a ballistic missile, and the other family would have in a part of their living room. They would have an anti-ship missile, and you know, everybody was hosting the Hezbollah. And now they will have to build it from the beginning. We'll see what will happen.
We only have about a minute. Let me ask this last question. Is there a sense of hope that we can do a hostage transfer before Hanukkah in this holiday season?
Well, there is a hope. I would say there is a big hope. And on one hand, you know, I pity the families because every time someone raises their hopes and then they crash back to the ground. But there is a hope because people are talking less. And we see the people are going back and forth. And we'll see what will happen. Because we know that Hamas is really under huge stress because, you know, Hezbollah is gone and Syria is gone. And they have no real support. And actually, the hostages are their last leverage.
Right.
So they're trying still to play it hard to get. It will not be simple. They still do not reveal how many of them are alive and how many are dead. And I'm sure they don't have even everybody, because some of the hostages were in other hands of the other groups. So we still have a very painful and difficult process ahead of us. But hopefully it will start. Personally, I would like it to see happen in one big deal. You know, everybody returns at once.
Get it over.
But,
absolutely.
Yeah, get it over. But I'm afraid it will not work that way.
Well, Colonel, we got to get to a break. We got to get to a break. I apologize. Please stay safe.
No, don't apologize.
And happy holidays to you and your family.
Thank you.
I think about you guys often.
Yeah. And happy Christmas and happy New Year to all of you over there. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back, folks. That was Colonel Alex Gann, retired colonel and fighter pilot for the Israeli Air Force, living in a small village in northern Israel. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Folks, remember, we will be visiting with Santa on Christmas Eve from 10 to 1. So get the kids and the grandkids to call on in and let them have an opportunity to speak with Santa and express what they want for Christmas. It's always very interesting to hear what they have to tell Santa when Santa probes a little bit about what are the things that mom or dad loves best of all and, you know, this and that. It's really funny sometimes, the responses that we get. But it's all good fun, and Santa's great, and he is willing to provide 3 hours for us, and we appreciate that for sure. So 10 to 1, you can call in at 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line, and we would love to get your kids, your grandkids, on the show. Scoot's going to be live from Perfume headquarters on the West Bank today, so stop by, say hi, save big on name brand perfumes and colognes just in time for the holidays. And top toys for tweens and teens he's going to be talking about, and how do those compare to the must-have toys that were on the shelves when you were a kid. I don't know about you, but I don't even know what is the most popular toy today. I'm so disconnected as it relates to toys. Not sure at all. You know, this weekend's kind of free because the Saints don't play till Monday night with the Green Bay Packers. But there is a lot of other football that will be coming your way. And WWL will have the LSU game. We got a lot going on as well. Pelicans are back in town this weekend, so you can look forward to that as well. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. Folks, when we come back after the top of the hour news break, we will visit with Tim Poche, CEO of Delta Utilities. That's the company that intends to buy the gas business from Entergy New Orleans. And Michael Heck, president and CEO of GNO Inc. And we'll also visit with Andronika Morris from Housing NOLA about the most recent letter released by the Bureau of Governmental Research. So we'll be right back after the break. Stay with us. This is Newell on WWL.